So we are coming to the end of a series of reflections on the word joy in the New Testament. And joy is the word hurrah, C-H-A-R-A. And it means in spite of your circumstances, you're able to clear away the clutter and realize that there are very good reasons to have joy. And so we want to finish that here tonight, or today and next week, with a thing that, as I have pondered it, it's called joy in the journey. So there is a number of people that had journeys right at the very giddy up of the Christmas story. Of course, you have the wise men that we will deal with today. They, even though it says we three kings, we know there probably weren't three, and we know they weren't kings. They were called magi, which really means astronomer, but it is the root of our word magician. So it has that built into it. But they were learned men. They come from over in Persia. So if in your mind's eye you can go to Israel in your head, which is on the eastern side of the Mediterranean, it's about the shape, not exactly, but like a shoebox up on end. If you go east, you cross over those mountains or those ridges, you go across the Jordan River, Lake Galilee or the Dead Sea, and you go across another run of ridges or mountains, and you come into the Arabian Desert. 500 years ago, 597, you would have Nebuchadnezzar, who was looking for some money, so he decides to run over to Israel and stomp on them and take away all their stuff. One of the young people's families that went over there was a guy by the name of Daniel. Daniel eventually grows up over there in the court of Persia, or in Nebuchadnezzar's court, and he would become pretty famous. And of course, in his journey of faith, what happens is he starts to share where he gets all this wisdom. And the wisdom comes from what you and I would call the Old Testament. Daniel would have been calling it the Scriptures. There was nothing old about it. Or the Hebrew Scriptures, that would be another phrase for it. Anyway, so Daniel, if you were to take a very close look in the book of Daniel, you come into Daniel 7, where it talks about that there's going to be one coming. And even last week, we sang a song called Ancient of Days. That idea comes from Daniel, that there is this one who's going to come, and he's going to change the world. And he does. And so here some, however many years later, a couple hundred years, there is these people over in Persia that if you were to track it down, how many of you are Star Wars people? There is always some in the crowd. That is, the root of that stuff is called Zoroastrian. That is the root of that movie series and of that way of thinking. And these astronomers or magi would have been steeped in that way of thinking. Except they also bumped into Daniel's stuff, which is Jewish. And so they have this idea that there's going to become a Messiah or a ruler from Judea. And when you bump into it, you go, well, how did they know over there that there would be this star? Well, again, jump into Numbers with the one talking animal. Well, there's probably two. You got the snake that talked to Eve. And I'm just not excited about talking snakes. You know, I don't know about you guys. But you have in the book of Numbers, you have this guy who Israel is coming out of the desert after 40 years of wandering around. And I can almost hear my wife say, How come we can't get directions? How come you can't stop and just ask where we are, or where we should go? Guys, how many guys have gotten lost and someone pointed out that you could just ask for directions? And of course, my masculine identity's at stake, so I would never stop. Here's the phrase. I know where I am eventually. So, but here they are. And they are coming across from Persia. It's about 600 miles going across in a desert. The only way you can cross a desert, do you know, is with camels. Camels tend to be obstinate. And if you look at them in the eye, sometimes they spit at you. So if you don't have a shower, it's tough to be spit by a camel, because then you smell like camel. And if you're in a tent with your spouse, they might say, you get your own tent. Anyway, so here you've got these guys, could have been gals, it could have been a caravan, a busload of people coming across the desert following a star. Well, where's the star idea come from? So in the book of Numbers, you have Balaam, right, who is a prophet, who the king of Moab didn't like the Jews that were wandering around, sucking up their land, taking over things, and he says to Balaam, I want you to curse them. Well, he doesn't. And what happens is the donkey talks to him. And it's one of the few times where you have, here's a paraphrase, where you have the ass talking to an ass. But you have this sense of that God is doing something. And one of the conversations that goes on that is recorded for us is that you hear from Balaam that there will be a star in the east that will bring about or will point to the Messiah or the Christ person. That's where all of that comes from. And so you are looking back, if you are these three or five or 20 magi, they have read the Hebrew scriptures, and this is going back to the time of Moses. So it's probably close to almost 1,000 years before these boys show up trying to follow this star. But they see the star, and all of a sudden they wake up to their wife and say, okay, we got to go. And she, like my wife, would say, well, where are we going? We're following that star. And my wife would say, you didn't tell me where we're going yet. Because they didn't know. How many of you have been on a trip with your spouse or family and you had no idea where you were going?
Still going.
But isn't it amazing that they got that caravan together with the camels and all the food, because you had to bring everything with you. There's nothing in the desert. There's no shop a minute. You ain't going to order a pizza from Pizza Hut. You know, none of that is there. So you got to bring it with you. And you can basically go on a camel about 20 to 25 miles a day. It's some 600-700 miles. So you're wandering for quite a period of time. But they believed, they saw this star, and they acted on what they saw. Now, in regards to our journey of faith, I'm hoping that you are finding joy in your journey of faith, but there are times in your journey that you do not know how it's going to end. I grew up in a family of, what was it? There were six kids. I just did my mother. I heard my mother give everybody's name. She was looking at me and go, Mary Kay, Sheila, Eileen, Sharon, She's looking at me. Michael! Billy! Right, Mom, way to go. But there is a sense in which, you know, when you grow up in a big family, and my mom's family is from Spalding, Nebraska, which is on the far side of Nebraska, north of a river called the Platte River. And my dad, because there were so many kids that came forth, that's kind of a euphemism for giving birth, coming forth. He got one of those station wagons with the back seat looking backwards.
Yeah.
Guess who sat that way? I spent a lot of my life looking behind where everybody else is looking forward. And everybody would say, oh, look at that. And I'm like, look at what? And you spend your whole life looking at things that nobody else is looking at. Anyway, in journeys, the unexpected happens. And I would say for all of you, how many of you in the last, say, 5 years have faced some adversity, some difficulties? And praise the Lord, the rest of you haven't had that. But your time is coming. So anyway, but here is a comment coming out of the book of James. James 1:7, it says, consider it joy. Remember, joy is regardless of the circumstance. Consider it joy when trials and tribulations come your way. For they come to, do you know the phrase? They come to prove your faith. Last, I think it was Christmas Eve, we were here and Jesse's family was here. And a lot of you know they are in Asheville. They went through the flood. And Brian and Cheryl went down and helped them along with some other people. And they have pictures of you standing in front of a U-Haul truck loading things. Anyway, and they want to say thank you to all that. They are still not in their home. It happened last, almost a year and a half. They lived in a B&B. And Cheryl, Brian's wife, saw Andrew. And he says, Andrew, you have really changed. And here was the phrase that he came into me and said, is it really that obvious? He said, she said I'm more grown up. And wouldn't that be wonderful for all of us when we see each other after a period of time to say, you're more grown up. And of course, when you think about that in your journey of faith, it's our capacity to trust and realize that whether you have the roadmap or not, God will lead you. So now, let's take a peek at this story. If you are wondering, the story of the Ancient of Days, if you don't have this, is Daniel 7, 9 through 14. And if you're looking for Balaam, it's in Numbers 24, 17. Anyway. Let's take a listen and hear about these magi. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, and Bethlehem is Bet, B-E-I-T. Of course, they change it in English, but it really means city of. So it's Bet when you read Hebrew, B-E-I-T, Bet. Lehem means bread, so it's city of bread. And, of course, Jesus would be the bread of life. In Judea, Judea would be south of Jerusalem, and Bethlehem is about 6 miles south. It sits on a ridge, so if you can imagine Bethlehem, there's a ridge. You come up to the Mediterranean, and then almost within about 40 miles, there's this ridge line that pops up. And along that ridgeline is where Bethlehem actually is. It's south of Jerusalem, but it sits between two summits, and it's the saddle. So Bethlehem is at the bottom of this saddle, and that rock is all limestone. The thing to remember about limestone is limestone is what they use at soccer games to line the fields. And then after 2 weeks, you go lime it again. Because it rained, because when lime gets wet, It melts. And so here's Bethlehem, who is sitting on a limestone run, and whenever it melts, it starts to leak into the ground, and it causes caves. And that'll pop up in a little bit. One other thing, as we think about caves, there is a church father, early church father, called Justin Martyr. The word martyr in Greek means witness. It does not mean one who gave their life. It means they were a witness to something. And Justin was his last name, they transliterated it and gave him Justin Martyr, one who's a witness. Anyway, Justin Martyr, 150 AD. He was from Bethlehem. He grew up over in that part of Israel. And he says when he was a kid, they used to point out that Jesus was born in that cave right over there. And you can read his writings, and he speaks of growing up and that people would come from other places to see where Jesus was born. So in about the 4th century, there is a Roman czar or king whose name would be Hadrian. This is in the 4th, probably in the 2nd century, sliding into the 3rd. And Hadrian decided he didn't like the fact that people were going to Israel to see where the birth of Jesus was. So he built a pagan temple in that community over where Jesus was supposed to have been born. And the temple was to, how does it pronounce? A-D-O-N-I-S. However that's pronounced. And then Constantine's mother in the 5th century comes to faith. Her name is Helena, and it's really spelt with just the E. They drop the H. But she would build churches throughout Israel. One is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is a huge church, which is supposedly over where they believe that Jesus' tomb was. And you can pull that up online and see it. She would also have built a church near the area on the western side of Galilee, Lake Galilee, and it's where they believe Jesus was teaching, say, the Beatitudes. And of course, the Beatitudes end with the Lord's Prayer. And so this church that she built is kind of an open-air structure, but on all of the walls, in all of the languages of the human race at that point, when I was there, there were 117 Lord's Prayer in languages from all over the world. And so, you know, for those of us who are Irish, I can show you where the Gaelic one is, you know, and then there's the French one and the German one. And then it's kind of interesting to bump into the Chinese one, the Japanese one, and then various cultures from around the world. 117 of those in this building, and they keep adding to it after all these years. But the church I want you to at least have in your mind's eye is called the Church of the Nativity. And the Church of the Nativity, if you pull it up online, it's a huge structure with pillars that two of us couldn't get our hands around. So it's fairly massive. And there's a long hallway, probably 4 times as long as this room, with pillars on either side. And they have some kind of wooden floor there. And when I was there, they had a leak in the ceiling. Imagine that after 1,500 years, a leak. They didn't know to call Brian Bilbrey and have him fix it. So here they are fixing this. And of course, the water dripped and it rotted some of the wood. So they pulled up the wood and they found a mosaic that ran the entire structure. And it's just remarkable to walk through. Anyway, you walk through it and it's loaded with silver and gold and you're like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. There's all this wealth in this room. And you get to the very end and there is a hole in the ground, maybe in the floor, that's maybe 18 inches circular, 18 inches, and it's got like silver, like pointing it out, and you have to get on your hands and knees and you look down, and it says, Jesus was born here. Mm-hmm. And the whole church is for that one place. And so I was there with probably a couple hundred people, and we were all taking our turns, sticking our head in this hole and looking at a rock. That's what's there. But when you pull back all of the church structure, what you find is that it's a limestone cave, that over the years the limestone has melted and generated a cave. So when Jesus was born, and it says there was no room at the inn, well, that's a kind of a bad translation. It was his family's home, his ancestral home, and everybody had to go there because of the census. So he's got Mary on a donkey. My wife said, if I had done that to her, I would not be here today. There, I'd be in a graveyard somewhere. Anyway, there is this idea that it was an inn, but it was really a home, and all Jewish homes had a number of rooms in it for visitors, and all the rooms were taken. But if your house backed up against the hillside in Bethlehem, you kept your animals in these caves. Hence the reason why Justin Martyr believed that Jesus was born in a stable with animals. Well, the stable makes it think of a structure that we would have, where really it was probably a cave where these people kept their animals. So it would only go back so far, and they only had to enclose the front of it. And so that's where I think that was, or at least from what I've read so far. At this moment in world history, to give you a broader perspective, there was a, what did they call it? An eagerness of expectation worldwide. And the world, as you would know, was around the Mediterranean. So anything that's Jewish, they think that that's the big sea in the world, is the Mediterranean. And when you take that word apart, Mediterranean, Ranian means earth, right? So it's the sea of Middle Earth is what that word actually means. And so you have all of these people around the world. So I'm going to give you three quotes that I found interesting. So you have a man by the name of Suetonius, who would write a book called The Life of Vespasian. And in chapter 4 on whatever, page 5, he would write this. There had spread over all the Orient, that's what they called Israel and Egypt and Turkey, that was called the Orient, all over the Orient, an old and established belief that it was fated that at time for men coming from Judea to rule the world. This is not a Christian. This would be a Roman historian writing about Vespasian's life. Vespasian would be the one who would conquer the Temple Mount and Jerusalem. That's who that was. Another one would be a man by the name of Tacitus. There was a firm persuasion that at this very time, the East was to grow very powerful, and rulers coming from Judea were to acquire a universal empire. Fascinating, isn't it? That even though you and I understand, because we've read it in the scriptures, that a Messiah would come, here are others who aren't Christians. They're not Jewish. They're just saying that worldwide there was this sense that something was going to happen. And then Josephus. I have brought this book, The Jewish Wars, here. If anybody wants to actually read The Jewish Wars, or you can't get to sleep, read The Jewish Wars, and you'll be asleep after 15 minutes. But he would write, about that time, one from their own country should become governor of the inhabitable earth. fascinating, isn't it? That there was this eagerness of expectation. They believed that something was happening. So some other things just to speak of that eagerness. There were people, and these magi were one, who studied the stars. Any of you do stars? You go out late at night and study stars? Kind of fun. My dad was a navigator in World War II. I grew up having to know where the Big Dipper was. It was like, there's no ice cream for you until you can point it out. And, you know, so I just grew up looking at the stars. And Beck and I remember going places with my dad, and we would all have maps. And my dad would say, just look at the stars. And I'm like, they don't tell me nothing. The stars don't speak. He said, well, don't you know that that means that we're here? And you know, he does the map work in his head. No, but he did. Stars. So at that point in human history, even Roman czars, or Caesar, as you would know it, believed that the stars foretold the future. Very interesting to think of. So when you and I, any of you do that astrology stuff, you know, whenever your birthday is supposed to dictate your life. Any of you followed that stuff?
I used to.
I was a Leo. But my name wasn't Leo. I didn't know the difference. Anyway, with all of that said, Nero was seeing the stars. And there was one time where there was stars that had fallen, a falling star. And everybody believed that he was going to be killed. So he decided to gather various governors of Rome and kill them all. So it would be somebody else. Of course, he meets a tragic death in probably 68 AD. But they looked to the stars to try to figure out what was happening. Fascinating to read of people who get a little bit of a clue. But that's the clue when you bump into the wise men. They were studying the stars. And this one Origen in the 3rd century believed it was a comet. Other people believed it was various planets that aligned. Anyway, causes these guys to step out on a journey, and they start walking, riding camels to Jerusalem. Now, let's think about this. They get to Jerusalem, and it is, Jerusalem. You walk down into a valley, and then Jerusalem is built on a thing called Mount Moriah, and that is where Abraham would try to sacrifice Isaac. That's that mountain. And so you got to walk down, and then you got to walk up to Jerusalem. So in your scriptures, they will oftentimes say, and we walked up to Jerusalem. What they're not telling you is they had to walk down first, and then they had to walk up. But here they are in Jerusalem, and it is a fairly condensed city in the way it's built, because it's all up on this mountain and then along the edges. And so here comes this caravan of people who've crossed the desert into this city called Jerusalem. And, of course, they've caused quite a stir. Who are all these people? And the question that they ask is, where's the king of the Jews? Fascinating, isn't it? And so in the city, there's quite a uproar about these people who have come, and supposedly there's been a king born. And so Herod gathers. Now Herod, he's a very interesting bird. There would be a lot of Herods. This would be Herod the Great. Herod the Great is 4'4". And so, and my apologize to any small guys, but he is the small guy syndrome. Which means he's always got to prove himself, and he always does big things. And so he rebuilds the temple. He rebuilds this, his own crematorium called the Herodian south of Bethlehem. He built Masada. He builds these various vacation homes along the Jordan and Dead Sea. Herod the Great. One night, Herod the Great, who is getting close to his death, probably about 3 BC is when he would die, the wise men come into Jerusalem. He was always afraid that his boys were going to try to usurp his throne. And so one night, he killed his wife and his 3 boys. And over in Rome, one of the Caesars, I can't remember which one it was, said, "You'd be luckier to be Herod's dog than to be his son." Fascinating, isn't it? So here comes these wise men. They come into Jerusalem. They start to ask who or where is the king of the Jews. It comes word to Herod. Herod gathers them, and Herod starts to ask questions. And he's like, "Where is this supposed to be happening?" And of course, for those of you who that know your Bibles, they bring the Sanhedrin together. The Sanhedrin is a mix of the Pharisees and the scribes. That's who that is. There are 70 of them. And they all gather right to one side of the Temple Mount. That's where they have a gathering. And they're meeting there. Herod is saying, "Where's this supposed to take place?" And eventually, they find out that it comes out of Micah. So here is the phrase, Micah 2:6. "But you, O Bethlehem Ephrath, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth one who is to rule Israel, whose origin is from old, from ancient of days." So here again, you hear that echo coming out of Daniel, the ancient of days. And isn't it crazy to think here was the Jewish high priest, the academic community of Israel, and they had no idea that 6 miles from them, the Messiah had been born. And the star was in the sky. And here they are. They had no clue. And so Herod says, "Well, this is what it says. Bethlehem is south of us, 6 miles. Just get on Route 57 and go south. You'll be right there." So the wise men and their caravan go on down to Bethlehem. But isn't it remarkable that the Jewish high priest didn't go? They weren't curious enough to find out the truth if the Messiah had been born. But here's these guys who have traveled 600 miles in a caravan with probably their families, and they have decided they're going to check it out. They're going to try to find if the Messiah has been born. And off they go. Now Herod said, as they're leaving, "Now if you find him, I want you to come back and tell me so I can go and worship him too." Of course, that was a lie. He didn't want to worship him. He wanted to kill him because that would threaten his throne. What Herod didn't know, he was going to be dead. He didn't have to worry about a little baby growing up and taking his throne. But notice, what I need for you at this point in this journey of faith is that God works through adversity. And those guys and that caravan coming out of Persia certainly had it. And what we haven't thought about is that in a dream, Joseph gets told that the baby Jesus is going to be threatened, and he's got to get that baby down to Egypt. So in the middle of the night, off they go. So for any of you who think, "I've had it hard, and God doesn't understand what I'm going through," yeah, I got news for you. He's very aware of how hard this is. And yet, in spite of all of that, listen to this, this last phrase. in Bethlehem of Judea, this is what has been written by the prophet. The prophet would have been Micah 2. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah. From you will come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod secretly called for the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go search carefully for the child. And when you have found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship. And after hearing the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star, which they had seen in the east, went on ahead of them until it came over the place where the child was to be found. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Isn't that amazing? So if you are a seeker, if you really want to know, there are real answers. And you too can have real joy. And then I love this just because it cleans up some of the Christmas story. And after they saw, they came into the house. So this whole idea of them coming to a manger, that's not what it says. They came to a house. They saw the child with his mother Mary. They fell down and worshiped him, and then they gave him gifts. Fascinating, isn't it, that so much of our Christmas story is accurate if you read it closely. If you don't read it closely, you kind of buy into all of the stuff. Like, I love the song Silent Night, but I'm here to tell you, in Bethlehem, it was not a silent night. There were angels talking to shepherds. Then later, there's a host of angels singing. There's a star in the sky. There's these crazy people coming from Persia. Bethlehem was not a quiet evening that night. It was noisy. So we kind of need to reframe some of our songs. Yeah.
Do you think that the Magi and wise men were there at Jesus' birth or when he was older? Like,
older.
Say 2 or 3.
Older. Because he would have been born, the star appears, and they start their journey. And it says right there, they came to the house. Well, he's no longer in that cave. Mom was probably saying to Joseph, we ain't staying in this cave. This smells like animals. I ain't buying this anymore. You go tell your cousin we're coming over. There's no room there. You go tell your cousin we're coming. There's no room there. You go tell your cousin we're coming. Anyway, with all of that said, why worship Jesus? Why at this time of year would I engage you to think about joy? Listen to this phrase. Because he's the King of Kings. Because he's the creator of all things. That comes out of the book of Colossians. He's the reason for life. He has given you life. So point to your neighbor and say, neighbor.
Neighbor.
Margaret, you and I will talk because you ain't talking to anybody. He has given you life. He is the smitten rock. Smitten rock. Interesting that they would phrase it that way. He's the Alpha and the Omega. The first and the end. He's the Lily of the Valley. Lily of the Valley is one of my favorite flowers come spring. He's the bright morning star. Bright morning star. And that's just a short list of his 200 names in the scriptures. Then coming out of Revelation 4:11, thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory, honor, power. As you walk through this week, if you have some time, read through either the narrative in Matthew, where we came out of today, or read the narrative in Luke. And just allow that to permeate the way you think. And I believe that if you're a seeker, you too would come before the King. Let's sing one last song. Hopefully you all have some time off this week. Enjoy the time. If you have family, it's really precious to be with people. But my prayer for you this week is that you get some time by yourself, you and Jesus, and you get to read some of the stories that are written to edify us as believers so that you too and have joy this season. Father, thank you for this time we have to sing, to be able to read, to be able to listen to one another, to be able to laugh and smile. Father, what a privilege it is to hear the laughter of the redeemed. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and all of God's people say,
Amen.
Enjoy the week. There's some cookies out there. Yeah.